Breathe with me. Just a regular breath. We're all breathing together. Now pay more attention to your breath. In through your nose, out through your mouth. If you feel like you can, close your eyes and keep breathing. Imagine yourself floating in the atmosphere above the planet. You are floating above North America, far enough away to see the whole expanse of this hemisphere. The contours of its geography are distant, but you can see the blues of oceans, the greens of land, the shape of islands, peninsulas, continents. Now imagine yourself coming closer, floating close enough to be right above North Carolina, the shore, the Piedmont, the mountains below you. With your next breath, imagine yourself floating down to just above the roof of Grace Covenant. You can see the whole building, the whole property, the garden, the playground, the parking lot and street full of cars, the rooftops of our three buildings. Keep breathing. Imagine yourself now floating down through the roof into the sanctuary, and you are hovering just above your body, where it's located right here. You see the top of your head, your shoulders. Notice what you're wearing, how your body is positioned. Now, with your next breath, slowly drop down into your body until you're fully present in your own skin. You feel your clothes on your back, the pew or chair supporting you, the back of your legs against the seat. Notice your muscles, your joints, your bones supporting you. Just notice how you feel in your body. When you're ready, slowly open your eyes. Look all around you. Look beside you. Look behind you. Notice all the colors, the surfaces, the light, the faces, the bodies around you. You are here. We are here in this sanctuary together. And your willingness to be fully present in community right now makes this a holy moment. Staying present in this space touches into a deep need, the world's need, our need, even God's need. We need each other. Now, it can be hard to see ourselves as standing in need. Presbyterians like to be the ones who are meeting others' needs, not the ones who need anything from others. Now, that resistance to telling the truth about ourselves, it runs deep within us, and it trivializes our relationships, and it trivializes the church. So I'm asking you to stay present in your need. See if you can actually touch into what you need. Compassion, support, change, healing. Maybe you need a friend. Maybe you need a second chance. Maybe you need accountability or gentleness. Maybe you need health insurance or a job or a place to call home. Maybe you need people you can trust. Maybe you need relief from pain. So keep breathing. Stay here together. She's not sure what to make of it, and she has every reason to be afraid. What's happening to her is dangerous. The weight of the world's expectations and judgments and cruelty is heavy. She's just a girl, 12 or 13, the age when her culture expects her to move from a father's house to a husband's house. Women's bodies are instruments, tools of accumulation and the transfer of wealth, containers for property and possessions for fathers and husbands. She is anticipating marriage, the next step for a girl her age. That's when her dreams start to change. That's when she realizes something is shifting, something is happening. An angel appears, no less, and tells Mary that she is pregnant, even though she's not married. Now, Luke tells the story of two miraculous pregnancies, Elizabeth's and Mary's. But Mary's situation is different than Elizabeth's. Elizabeth is old. She's lived her whole life with her culture's judgment because she is childless. She's carried the weight of the shame that her culture taught her to feel about her body, about her failure. Her impossible pregnancy means liberation from that shame that she's carried all of her life. Her pregnancy moves her into a social position of honor that she thought she would never have. But Mary's situation is the opposite of Elizabeth's. Mary's pregnancy does not liberate her from societal shame. It threatens her with societal shame. Mary is not being delivered from grief and sadness and judgment. She is ushered into a dangerous place where her vulnerability is extreme. She could lose everything because of this pregnancy that she did not consent to, that she didn't expect. Now, in Matthew's gospel, Mary's situation is really refracted through Joseph's dilemma. He has dreams that help him decide to stay with Mary, to go forward with the marriage, even though she's carrying a baby that he knows is not his. But in Luke's gospel, it is Mary's dilemma alone. It is her. In her body, now occupied by another life, tangled up with an epic transition in a massive universe. In that holy moment, that dangerous, fraught, terrifying moment, everything changes. And Mary is swept up into a course of events that are still playing out over 2,000 years later. Her body has continued to be occupied. appropriated by the church fathers looking for a way to concentrate their power and to pacify her and the rest of us too. Mary's courage, Mary's radical wisdom, Mary's power got distorted. And those church fathers tried to replace her with a meek and mild model of female submission. So if you can, close your eyes again. Notice how you're feeling. What it feels like for that tension, that appropriation, that distortion to be named out loud. Where do you feel it in your body? Are you able to sit with the grief of what has been lost? Do you feel resistance? Do you feel sadness? Do you feel anger? Do you feel confused? Be present here in this moment, in this memory of a girl brave enough to understand a divine purpose in her life. Brave enough to understand that this unlikely gestation was about liberation of the oppressed. It was about social convention being overturned. It's about God choosing those society shames and blames and discards for the transformation of the world. And that same brave girl is deployed to pacify, to oppress. If you're present in this moment, you feel that violation somewhere. So open your eyes and look around. We need to feel that together. The way that the faith that's intended for liberation and for empowerment can so easily shapeshift into a faith that pacifies and oppresses. Isn't really sure what's going on, but he knows he needs to be there for his friend, Yusuf. The police want to question Yusuf, so 16-year-old Corey Wise decides to go with him to the questioning, an act of friendship, a way to do right by Yusuf and his family. In that holy moment, that moment of friendship and loyalty, that dangerous, fraught, terrifying moment, everything changes. Even though 16-year-old Corey was nowhere near the crime that Yusuf was being questioned about, the attack of a jogger in Central Park, even though Corey was not even close to that place, even though he was only at the police department to support his friend, Corey ended up being convicted and spending 14 brutal years in jail for a crime he did not commit. And 2 of those years were spent in solitary confinement. It was hell, Corey said, pure hell. Every day you fight, you're not supposed to make it out. How did you survive at all? Someone asked Corey during his visit to Asheville this past Friday. Music, Corey says. I kept my music in my head. I let it talk to me. I let it tell me things. How do we walk around with all this trauma in our bodies? Because I've been through the same thing as you. I've been incarcerated, a young black man from Asheville asked Corey. Corey says, you learn that there aren't too many people who really have your best interests at heart. You learn that. Who is Corey Wise after all you've been through? Ask another young black man from Asheville who's trying to turn his life around. I'm a vessel, Corey says. I'm a vessel for you. I'm a vessel for who needs me, Corey says. Don't look away. Don't disassociate. Don't leave your body. Corey is asking us to stay present, to be present in the pain of what happened to him, to be present in the pain of what is happening to people of color in our country, to generations of young black and brown men who've been distorted and contorted by narratives we have all been taught about them, that they're dangerous, that they're incapable, that they're disposable, and that they're better off dead if they stop serving the system that was set up to pacify them, to terrify them, to identify them with what's wrong, when they're really being used as a smokescreen for what's wrong. Our narrative is what's wrong. The faith that gestated in Mary is the faith that transforms the world, not conforms to the world. The God we worship is a liberator, and you are being asked to take that into your body, to let that fill you with a sense of possibility and promise, to let that free you from the burdens of conformity to a culture that tells you that you are only worth the wealth that you generate. That lie has left us as a shadow of who God is calling us to be. I was about 10 or 11 when it was my turn to be Mary in the Christmas pageant. A baby blue sheet from home draped over my head. The song I had to sing by myself felt impossible. The church taught it to me as a lullaby, and I struggled to sing both loud enough and soft enough to be the Mary they taught me to be. I remember the feeling of heat coming off my body from all the nervous energy that had nowhere to go. I remember the feeling of my body shaking. It felt strange, like there was something that needed to change. Something wasn't right. I can feel those sensations even now. When my body gets caught up in the dissonance between God's liberation and the church's expectation, staying present to it all can be painful. And I think about Mary. Not the meek and mild Mary, but the brave and determined Mary. The Mary that sings in the face of danger and grief and fear and resistance. Mary's song. That's how she sits in the trauma of her occupied body, her occupied culture, her occupied gender, her occupied identity, her occupied faith, and holds on to the truth of God's vision of liberation tangled up in her body. It is her vulnerability and the strength that her vulnerability gives her that makes Mary able to birth God's hopes for the world. It's her capacity to be present to her own need that allows her to stand in what the world needs from her. Mary's trying to tell us something about ourselves and the creative healing potential that gestates within us all. We access it through vulnerability, not in spite of vulnerability. Our need for God is God's need for us. We are vessels. Vessels for each other. And the joy of standing tall in our need is Mary's song to us. It's not a lullaby to sing us to sleep. It is a rallying cry for us to kindle the courage to give ourselves to the task of birthing a world that is waiting to be born.